This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
You're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark. From its place under the Economic Planning Unit, the Malaysia Petroleum Resources Corporation, or MPRC, is responsible for the growth of the country's oil and gas services and equipment industry, with the aim of making Malaysia the preferred hub for OGSE activities here in the region. But the times are changing, and can this industry, which has been beset with legacy issues in the past, change along with it? To help us answer that this morning, we're speaking with MPRC CEO Mohamed Yazid Jaafar. Yazid, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us on the show.
So first off, let's take a look at the MPRC itself. Under the National OGSE Industry Blueprint, which is supposed to run until 2030, the MPRC is looking to serve as the government's main point of contact, similar to the UK Oil and Gas Authority. You're going to be coordinating multiple agencies. Sounds like it's going to be a bit of a bureaucratic nightmare for you. What's the response been like to this proposal?
Well, the good thing is we started off on the right footing, if you like. When we started on this project, on the blueprint, if you like, we have engaged all the various stakeholders earlier on. We are talking about 9 ministries, 10 agencies, and 4 associations, as well as Petronas, obviously, and 1 bank, the Association of Bank of Malaysia as well. So we've got all parties interested in line. They are actually on board with the idea of making sure that they are partly responsible as well in delivering some of the initiatives that the blueprint has identified. But we do have certain systems in place, namely good governance to make sure that things do happen.
I'm curious how much input did Petronas have on the blueprint, seeing as it's the national oil and gas company. Not a lot could probably be done without it to drive the change as well.
You're absolutely right. They were on board since the beginning. They were part of our technical committee as well as the steering committee. So they have a large say in terms of where the domestic direction of the oil and gas industry is heading, apart from giving us some of the sort of lesson learned in the earlier parts of the development of oil and gas services equipment in the country. So yes, Petronas were involved from the beginning.
The blueprint highlights the fact that the industry overall is quite bloated. So you list 4,000 vendors as of 2018, 2,700 of them active. So why is it that we have so many dormant companies, a third of the vendors listed in the country?
We believe this is to do with legacy issues. Since the beginning, in the 1970s, we tend to the government, especially, we introduced a lot of programs, including Petronas One as well, to develop the companies, the industry, to bring them to the level where we're supposed to support the oil and gas industry development. Unfortunately, a large part of them have not moved on. They're still in the old mode of doing business, if you like. They're looking at sort of opportunity, simple work, looking at
sort of rent-seeking behaviors.
To put it simply. But I'd like to highlight here as well the structure, if you like, of the 2,700 companies that we do have. 98% of them are actually SMEs. So they are limited in their capability in terms of growing their expertise, growing their business as well. Mm. Quite fragmented.
So is that one of the reasons then that we don't, our industry overall is not as efficient as the 2 major case studies that you highlight in the blueprint, namely the UK and Norway? Because the UK and Norway both generate twice the amount of revenue compared to us, with half the number of companies. Is this all down to a size issue, the fact that so many of our existing companies are SMEs?
Well, a large part of it, yes, but there are other issues that come under consideration as well. If you look at the in terms of technology ownership, we do not have a lot of companies who own technologies. We either license them, but we do not own ourselves. We don't develop, we don't have spend enough in R&D. We have our own technology. That's one aspect. The other aspect is again, as I mentioned earlier, our focus has always been on domestic businesses. So to go out of the country, you have to be resilient you have to be extremely competitive. You know, you must have a robust business to compete in the region. And that's exactly what the companies in Norway as well as in UK are doing. Their businesses are not limited within their own countries, but looking at regionally as well as globally. So that is our aspiration. Hence, one of the focus of the blueprint is to make sure that, you know, we start looking outside. Export is our priority. And to do that, we have to have the right technology, the right sort of efficient business model to be competitive.
But you also have to have the right ecosystem. One of the things highlighted by vendors that was listed in your blueprint is that existing Bumiputra requirements are not necessarily fostering true capability development within the OGSE industry. Realistically, though, what can be done about this?
Well, if you look at the nature of the OGSE industry itself, it is important on two fronts. At first, the first one is they are the enablers, if you like, for the domestic oil and gas development. Without the domestic oil and gas development, you know, we will end up something like in Singapore, where our services is focused towards the other countries, other oil and gas producing countries. Right. So apart from that, the second front is the industry itself is important enough to sustain, you know, to support the economic aspiration of the country. It contributes between 5 to 8% of GDP in 2018. It provides jobs to 59,000 people. It's quite a big number of jobs there. Some of them actually lost during the COVID-19, unfortunately. So the reason being, we don't see it as in terms of overprotective. We are making sure that we are not handicapped when we start to open the market. Because as I mentioned, there's a lot at stake here, 5 to 8% of GDP, 59,000 jobs. We just want to make sure that we are on equal footing when we start opening up the market.
But can we be on that equal footing with other oil-producing countries with the existing Bumiputra requirements in place?
In certain aspects, yes. In certain areas. Not all OGSEs. There are certain sort of fields which we can. We are leaders on. We are leaders in, rather. We are moving one step at a time, making sure that our industry is will be sustained in the long term.
Which fields would these be?
We're looking at the issue of maintenance, construction and installation. That is where some of us are quite strong in. We're looking at in terms of engineering as well, for the listeners' information here as well. Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, we have been recognized. We are recognized as the center of excellence for engineering services for oil and gas in the region. We are strong in that area.
Overall, the national blueprint highlights 31 initiatives, 10 of which have been designated as flagship. Right now, we are in the pivot stage of the process, one part of which has been recovering from the oil price crisis we saw in 2020, from the impact of COVID-19. And many companies were hit very badly. Brent crude prices appear to have recovered. But is the worst yet over for companies within the OGSE industry?
That's the $60,000 question, isn't it? We are not expecting any turnaround, not until 2023 anyway, as far as the oil and gas services equipment is concerned. And hence, you see in our phases development, phases of rolling out of initiatives, we're looking at 2023 when we do have all the 31 initiatives roll out to coincide really with the expected turnaround of the oil and gas services equipment. Just to mention something about COVID-19, because COVID-19 is actually unique. It's one in 100 years or maybe one in 200 years event. What it has given to the industry is it has brought the timeline of the energy transition forward. We know that change is inevitable. What COVID-19 has done is actually brought that timeline forward. We have a sneak peek of what the future looks like when the oil and gas demand is low. And that, in a way, becomes an impetus for us to work hard to make sure that the transformation of the industry is wholesome rather than on a piecemeal basis.
I'm speaking with Mohd Yazid Jaafar, CEO of the Malaysian Petroleum Resources Corporation. Up next, a closer look at some of the flagship initiatives held under the National OGSE Blueprint. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Mohammad Yazid Jaafar, CEO of the Malaysia Petroleum Resources Corporation. So there are a variety of initiatives that this blueprint puts forward in order to usher the OGSE industry along this transformation journey. And one of those is industry consolidation. This is something that we do see in other industries that have also come under pressure. As we were talking about earlier, only about 2,700 of the existing vendors in the country are active. Most of them are SMEs, not necessarily of a significant enough size to compete on an international scale. So do we have a target, an optimal number that the MPRC is looking at?
We don't have a magic number, if you like. We limit to the market. What we are doing in the blueprint is actually to provide the right ecosystem, the right condition for them to consolidate. We can only prepare the place and the time and the right, maybe the right incentive as well for them to consolidate. But at the end of the day, it's up to their own due diligence, their own sort of business opportunities and business risk appetite to make sure that they do consolidate, to ensure that they survive the onslaught, if you like, of efficient drive in development of oil and gas.
The suggestions listed in the blueprint were things like tax holidays, you know, giving support to companies looking to consolidate. But shouldn't we also perhaps be looking at more push factor policies like, for example, raising the bar for bidding for projects? You have to be of a certain size in order to succeed in government contracts, for example.
Well, as I mentioned, out of that 31 initiatives, I've been out, if I'm not mistaken, about nine. We have nine implementation lead, if I'm not mistaken. These are the different agencies that are responsible in making sure that these initiatives are carried out throughout the five-year period, throughout the 10-year blueprint lifetime, if you like. So one of the initiatives that we're looking at is actually on the VDP program. And I'm sure you're aware of the vendor development programs that Petronas has been successfully implemented and managed to bring up a lot of local companies up to the international level, if you like. So in these aspects, all the all the conditions imposed, for example, in the development of VDP include some of the what we call a push factor. There are minimum requirements for you to meet. There are minimum standards, oil and gas standards that Petronas has imposed in some of the domestic work that these guys are supposed to go into. So more often than not, the push comes from the technical aspects to make sure that they meet the high standards of the oil and gas industry has imposed. The coal industry, for example, the funding finance industry as well, has sort of set up their own standards in making sure that some of the oil and gas industry players comply to. An example here is the introduction of more and more ESG standards compliant sort of funds that are made available. These are some of the push factors, hopefully, together with the pull factors will help pull our industry in the right direction, if you will.
Mm-hmm. The OGSE industry at the moment is seeing a little bit of a skill gap, right? So what do you see as the most effective way to fill this? Because if we think about it, oil and gas is not necessarily what one would consider a sexy industry to be in this day and age. If you're a fresh grad coming out with an engineering, perhaps, background, you're going to be looking at, ooh, tech companies. Oil and gas, the perception is that it's kind of a sunset industry. So how do you plan to change that, attract more talent?
That's very, very good question, actually. Very, very interesting question. How do we make oil and gas industry sexy again? I think here, really, we're looking at the trend, if you like, into low carbon industry. The push, if you like, is we must produce the old traditional oil and gas through a cleaner, more sustainable solutions that includes introduction of digital, introduction of technology to drive more efficient operations. And that seems to be the thing that generates a lot of interest among new talents, if you like. So these are the areas that the industry is heading anyway, and these are the areas that we are making sure we work with the suppliers, if you like, the higher education, the R&D centers, to make sure that the talent stays and within oil and gas industry.
Hmm. In terms of how the oil and gas industry is also going to evolve, the target that has been set from the blueprints, as I understand it, is for oil and gas companies to derive a quarter of their revenues from outside oil and gas by 2030. So what would you say is the status of that right now, just to give us a bit of a picture of the amount that needs to be done over the next 10 years?
We do have figures, but those are not actually hard targets. These are our aspirations. Because you know, in the ever-changing sort of world that we live in now, it is quite difficult to put a hard target. The reason being, we do have an existing sort of several companies, Malaysian ODSE companies, who are already in the deriving revenue outside oil and gas. For example, here, to name a few, we do have Silver Dynamic. They are involved in a lot of digital work. Their maintenance. There are also sort of Iverson Dye. They are involved in construction and installation of offshore winds, you know, off their base in Dubai. So there are companies already in generating revenues outside of oil and gas. But if you look at the opportunities here, the opportunities is not just limited into the outside oil and gas per se. There are also opportunities in providing clean energy infrastructure where we have a lot of strength on. Example here is services to support the blue and green hydrogen initiatives, carbon capture and storage, the CCUS, and the energy storage in general. We do have expertise. We have, like I said, you know, a number of highly specialized engineering houses, fabricators, and equipment manufacturers within the country. So these are the areas which we think a lot of the existing ODSE industry companies, players will go into. We're quite confident around 20 to 25% revenues will be generated within this area.
So 20-25% of revenues by 2030. What would you say is the percentage of revenue derived from outside oil and gas right now?
I don't have the figures at hand, but I don't think it's probably in single figures anyway.
Okay. So you're also eventually looking at, we touched on this earlier, urging Malaysian companies to look outside of our borders. The National OGSE Industry Blueprint is also eventually looking at setting up an export fund. So I'm curious as to where these funds are going to come from, you know, how much is eventually going to be needed. Your thoughts on this?
Right. There are a couple of thoughts, actually. I'd just like to remind that the blueprint is not actually, the blueprint is a roadmap, if you like. We haven't actually discovered everything there is that needs to be done along the roadmap. For example, here, the export fund is an idea that we that came from the industry themselves, not from the companies, to say that we need to have this to help our venture overseas. And there are already existing sort of funds available to various government agencies, mostly with Matrade. There are sort of opportunities available in digitalization sort of initiative effort from other agencies in English in the country. So, and there is also a second sort of school of thought saying that we need to have a dedicated fund. The first one was, can we consolidate all the existing funds that we have now to make sure that we reduce redundancy, to make sure that there is no overlapping in terms of coverage, that we call this fund, one fund, if you like, the export fund. So that's the one school of thought. The second school of thought is actually to create a new one. So as I mentioned, this is a journey which has been led by Patrick as the leading agency for this particular initiative. We will come across that bridge and then we will make the necessary announcement.
Have conversations already begun in terms of kind of consolidating an avenue towards this export fund, whether it be a new fund or a consolidation of existing incentives?
I think we are more leaning towards the consolidation of funds, you know, to make sure that we make the best use of whatever funds that we have now. But you know, there are also room for improvement, and we are not discounting the fact that there is a need to have a dedicated fund as well for this particular effort. what we have at the moment now is finite. The services that they provide domestically is actually finite. If they were to compete, they were able to survive outside, then this is the best training ground, if you like, before we are forced to look outside. So it's crucial. It sets the right message that you know, we have to open up, we have to be competitive globally for you to survive.
Where do you see our overseas markets being?
We have to look at both the traditional oil and gas industry that's within this region, as well as in the Middle East. There are also new sort of energy aspects that we need to consider as well. That cuts across in Europe, in Vietnam, say, for example. So these are some of the areas. But I think the primary focus is within the region, because this is where we have a lot of support in terms of logistics. This is where support from supply chain management, if we like. So it makes sense for us to be close at our base.
Ultimately, one of the aims of the MPRC is to grow our OGSE industry to an internationally recognised standard. From a numbers perspective, what would you say is the compound annual growth rate of the industry right now? And what kind of growth rate would you be targeting over the next few years?
At the moment, it hasn't been all rosy. Obviously, the industry is under a lot of pressure. We've not been growing as much as we want to. But this is something that, you know, we hope to address by making sure that we become more competitive, more resilient. Because at the end of the day, despite not having the desired margin level, if you like, you know, to survive within the industry, there are some pain points that we need to address quickly. An example here is, you know, we are too focused again. We are too focused domestically. We are looking at sort of businesses that limited to within our own backyard. We go for simple sort of jobs. You know, we're not looking at taking on businesses or projects which are complicated, but then again, sustainable and long term. So these are some of the pain points that we need to address quickly.
Do you have a rough indication of figures that you can share with us?
Not at the moment.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us this morning, Yazid. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you for having us, then.
I've been speaking with Mohamed Yazid Jaafar, CEO of the Malaysia Petroleum Resources Corporation. This has been The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.